Today's program is brought to you by TechServe. For more information, visit techserve.com.
You are listening to You Look Hungry, the New Orleans Sessions. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio broadcasting live out of New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm hanging outside of Snake and Jake's Bar on Oak Street. It is hot, the mosquitoes are fierce, and I'm joined tonight by none other than bartender Allie Mills. Allie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, for listeners out there, can you explain your background in bartending, and how did you get into bartending in the first place?
Oh, sure. So, I've been bartending in New Orleans for about, 5 years, something like that. If you count my first bartending job, which was sort of half bartending, I actually was hired when I graduated from school by my friend who had just taken over a job at the Wine Institute of New Orleans. So I started at a wine bar, and they had a very small, very sort of esoteric and interesting liquor selection, and I found that I was the only person who would sort of nerd out on the labels. So I decided that it was sort of a fun world. There are lots of stories. Don't get me started on chartreuse. I can go on for hours. It's sickening. But so that's how I got into it, and I've just been sort of doing it ever since.
So you run, in my opinion, one of the coolest events in New Orleans of the moment. It's called Dash and Pony. And can you explain what it is, how it came about, and what is the vibe? Because it's pretty incredible.
Sure. So the Dash and Pony is a party, cocktail party, I guess, that my friend Corey, who is another excellent bartender in town, and I throw once a month. It moves around town. It's basically an excuse for the bartenders around town to kind of play with things. The original idea, like a lot of good ideas in New Orleans, came about late at night at a bar similar to the one where we are right now, after a few cocktails or brews or whatever. But we were just talking, and we were talking about how cool it would be if we could try out things that aren't particularly, I don't know if like taboo or sort of weird or bizarre, as I don't know which of those kind of terms is best, but I mean, every bartender, especially craft cocktail bartenders, they have these, you know, ideas that they can't really do, or they can't put on their menu, or, you know, they're using ingredients that aren't necessarily received well by the public or something like that. And so it's kind of an excuse for us to play with the cocktails that are crazy cocktails that we come up with in our mind. So we decided to throw a party. It's kind of an interesting vibe, I think. The ones that have gone so far are a lot of, you know, New Orleans is such a service industry town. It's like a lot of cooks and bartenders and waiters and waitresses get off work at like 1, and they come and, you know, geek out about the stuff we're doing. And we actually just started the past one. We had food for the first time. We usually just have cocktails and homebrew beers, but this time we had awesome food, so it's turning into kind of an event. Bigger event, but it's in, I don't know, how would you describe that? You came to the last one, so my vibe is that I'm, you know, bartending, so I'm freaking out.
But. Yeah. I mean, picture this, a beautiful house in the Bywater. I mean, the location changes every time. Mm-hmm. I walked through a dark alleyway on faith, and I was ushered into a beautiful, lush backyard full of fig trees and all kinds of lush banana plants. And
yeah, that was a great location.
Beautiful, like, light bulb string lights and a huge crowd of beautiful people and an amazing built, like, handmade built bar that you built yourself, right?
Yes. And I built the bar myself.
It's amazing. It's like there's delicious food. The Ball brothers cooked. What did they make?
Yes, the Brothers Ball. They made...
Wait, who are the Brothers Ball?
The Brothers
Ball. You
should
describe them because they're very, like... specific people.
They are very specific people. They are two of my good friends in town. They're twin brothers. They're both cooks. They're both very talented cooks, and have worked in several award-winning and well-known restaurants around town, which I won't mention because that's kind of their deal, but they are characters.
They look like pirates.
They do look like pirates. They have, yeah, they have lots of tattoos and handlebar mustaches, and they kind of look like they belong on a ship. They recently bought somewhat matching motorcycles. They're funny, but
and they're twins.
And they're, yeah, we already said that.
Oh, okay.
But so they make delicious food, and they for a while were doing a pop up outside a bar called The Saint, and they came to one of the first Dash and Ponies and offered to do it for us, so we kind of teamed up, and so they made kimchi, Korean short ribs, and like a cold noodle salad. It was very Asian. It was great. It was delicious.
So at the last Dash and Pony, let's talk about what you were making, because all of the drinks that are on it are very unique, and then you also had homemade New Orleans brewed beer.
Yes.
So let's talk about first the cocktails and then who's making the beer and what does it taste like.
Okay. So the cocktails change every time, and they are not necessarily my cocktails. I love it when other bartenders want to put their stuff on the list, because I think that's the whole point, you know, it's to be able to have fun with everyone. But we did, oh man, if I can remember, we usually have four or five, and we usually try to keep them, we try to have a well-rounded list. You know, we have like a fizz and a sour, a long and a brown and stirred, basically, if that makes sense to people that aren't cocktail nerds like me. But they were cool. We had a couple interesting ingredients this time. We had
there was something that tasted like bananas Foster, sort of.
Yeah, we made, that was the long this time. We did a rum, a spiced rum, homemade spiced rum, blah blah blah, banana juice, brown sugar syrup, and champagne. It was actually one of the simpler cocktails on the list, but it tasted a lot like Bananas Foster. That was a
but
that
not
was a good
as sweet
one.
And gross.
It
was
wasn't
like
as sweet and gross.
Perfect flavor balance.
Yeah, we tried because it was outside this time, so we tried to keep all of the drinks sort of refreshing. I think my favorite one from this time was the tequila cocktail, sort of loosely based on a 21st century cocktail. It had chocolate and tequila. It had a chartreuse rinse, which I, you know, loved. And I think a lot of bartenders are into these, like, oil garnishes. So it had a cayenne oil garnish, which was really nice as well. I liked that. That was probably my favorite. A lot of people also liked the cucumber one.
Well, there was one in particular. It was, like, homemade root beer with...
That was your favorite.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was... it was vermouth... vermouth vodka, homemade root beer, basically like a homemade root beer extract almost. And
there was an orange peel in there.
Orange. Sorry, I get them all confused now that they've happened so often, and they're not my recipes all the time. So I'm like, what was in that? Was great, but I have no idea, no recollection. Like, need my notebook in front of me all the time.
Well, so, okay, talk about the beer, because that's really pretty fabulous as well.
Yeah, so there's a pretty large community of people in New Orleans that are making sort of homemade beverage stuff, which is great. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we use at the Dash and Pony are things that my friends and people in the community have given me. Like, somebody gave me a jar of awesome brandied cherries that we used once, and somebody gave me like a dill aquavit that they made, and that was crazy and great. And but so the beer that we use, because you know you have to have a beer, right? You can't have a bar and not have beer. So there are a couple of people that brew beer. My friend and colleague Nathan Carter brews beer for it, my friend Stuart Freeman is starting to brew beer for it. So a couple of other people have come forth, things like that. But the beer is always really interesting because it gets so hot in New Orleans that there's like a season for it. You know, right now it's way too hot to brew everything. So, and this is something I didn't really know. Before I started doing this, I didn't know that much about brewing techniques and things like that. So it's interesting because every beer, you know, we do it once a month, and so the beer is planned way farther in advance than the cocktails or anything else. And
how does the heat affect the brewing?
Well, I mean, it's a fermentation process, so it gets too hot and the yeast will die, I guess, or the bottles will explode, or I don't know. It sounds really dramatic every time they tell me what's going on. They're like, we can't do it.
It's horrifying.
Yeah, they can't let things ferment, or things will rot before properly
maturing.
I don't know. Yeah, maturing.
Wait,
sounds
so
awesome.
Like, what kinds of beers are they serving up?
Okay.
What do they taste like?
Yeah, so one of my favorites that Nate actually made was a lemon balm beer de garde, which was great. And it was lemon balm that he grew in his garden.
Hot damn. I'm sad I didn't try that.
I know. It was really great. It was very refreshing. Beer de garde is an old style beer. Basically a beer meant to age. But it was, so yeah, he made that one, I guess, like, he started making that one about 6 months ago, and we served it at the last Dash and Pony, and it was very well received, perfect for the sort of climate, the temperature right now, really,
tasty.
I know, really refreshing, I guess, and with
yeah.
The lemon balm, too, it was refreshing, but yeah, so beer... He likes to do these beers that are sort of esoteric and olden style, like sort of not beers that you can find in a store, or not styles that you can find in a store. But yeah, that was my favorite. Strong, strong pale ale. Yeah. But anyway.
So what is the name, like, Dash and Pony? Because bartender Chris Hanna was there, who has been on You Look Hungry before.
Yes.
And we were talking about the name a little bit. And I literally thought that you were inspired by, like, My Little Pony and just random
because I like
words.
Ponies. It's true. Yeah. I do like ponies.
I was hoping there was a mini pony, but there wasn't. So, like, what's the significance?
Next time there will be a mini pony.
I'm not going to come unless there is one next time.
I promise. If anybody out there has...
With glitter on it.
Right.
A
glitter.
A la Kim Kardashian.
Running around.
Engagement.
Preferably pink glitter.
Yeah.
On a Shetland pony. Anybody, just bring it on by. But yeah, so Dash and Pony, I mean, they're basically the only two things that you need for a cocktail. A pony is the 1 ounce side of a jigger, which is a traditional bartender measuring tool. You know, the little thing that looks like an hourglass. So one side will be an ounce and a half, and the other side will be an ounce, and the ounce side is called a pony. And then a dash, like a dash of bitters. Kind of, sort of a weird way for us to, like, nod our hats at the New Orleans Sazerac tradition, like, cocktail tradition, but, yeah, it is funny, a lot of people, you either get the name and what it means, and you're Chris Hanna, and you think it's awesome, and Chris Hanna is awesome, by the way.
Or you're me, and you're obsessed with
ponies.
Kim Kardashian's engagement, which
involved... right.
No, it involved...
And also ponies.
Two live ponies with glitter on it.
And their store is Dash.
Oh, whoa. This just blew my mind a little.
Yeah, somebody told me that one.
Wow.
But the other thing is that my friend was like, it sounds like an indie rock band from Portland. Like,
yes.
When you started inviting people on Facebook, they thought it was like a band. A band, yeah. Which I'm cool with that too.
So we're gonna take a really quick break, but when we get back, we've got more from New Orleans-based bartender Allie Mills of Dash and Pony. You're listening to You Look Hungry, Keep It Locked.
I need a new computer. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Apple Store.
What? Don't go to the Apple Store. Go to TechServe.
What's TechServe? I thought Apple Store was the only choice.
No, you're crazy. TechServe is so much better than the Apple Store. They're New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. Plus, the store is really cool. You got to go check it out. They're located at 119 West 23rd Street.
Well, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
TechServe is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. For more information, visit TechServe.com. That's TechServe.com.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to You Look Hungry. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by bartender Allie Mills of the fantastic event called Dash and Pony, one of the best boozy events I've attended in New Orleans of recent. And before the break, we were discussing, you know, how Dash and Pony came about, what she's making, et cetera, and the vibe. And something that I've noticed at these events is that, like, really fantastic New Orleans bartenders are there. They're hanging out. It's their night off. It seems like, I don't know, I'm obviously not a bartender, but this town is a tourist town, and people make delicious cocktails, but maybe I'm reaching here, but it seems like a really great space for people on their night off to kind of get behind the bar and freestyle and make crazy things that they don't get to make at wherever they work at.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a time of the night during Dash and Pony when you know, people who have to work the next day early leave, and then suddenly I'm like, oh, it's all service industry, it's all bartenders, and, you know, all of these cats are really intimidating to me. I mean, there are some pretty big ballers on the scene that show up sometimes, and that always blows my mind. And, you know, every single time we've had it, I think at least one bartender hops behind the bar when Corey and I get a little over
exhausted.
It at, like, 3 a.m., you know, and, like, just start making things. And, you know, it just, the conversations that happen are really inspiring. And, you know, everybody's thinking about these things and new ways to do things and new bars outside of New Orleans and new sort of food and beverage trends. And, you know, it's really, I think, a good, that's my favorite part of the night, I think. I like it when it's busy, and I like being in the weeds in that way. It's kind of an adrenaline rush, but I like it better when that's done, and then everybody is sort of kind of just talking about cool stuff going on. And it's interesting right now, I think, in New Orleans. There's a lot of cool stuff going on, and I think there are a lot of people who are getting kind of, I don't know what the term would be, sort of, there's a new generation coming up, a new generation of restaurants and bars and bartenders and cooks and things that are sort of all getting restless for new things and hungry for new things in New Orleans. And I think it's kind of a great time to be here in a way.
Don't say that. Everyone's going to come now.
Stay away.
Don't tell the secrets.
But no, I mean, I've lived here for a long time. I went to college here and I graduated. I moved away. And then I came back and started bartending here. And it's just the sort of change that's happened over the past few years is really fascinating. So
yeah, that is very obvious. I have lived here off and on for 10 years and, mm-hmm. you know, just being here, I've been struck by the atmosphere is very charged and different in a very positive
yeah.
way in terms of, you know, new businesses and all mm-hmm. sorts of creative ventures. Like, what do you think
Tons
it is in the past year or two that has really shifted to allow that to occur?
I don't know. I think I have a theory. My theory is that a lot of people came to New Orleans and fell in love with New Orleans after Katrina. That's just, you know, that's a fact, people say. You know, a lot of young people and innovative, creative thinkers, movers and shakers, you know, came down to sort of volunteer. And then a lot of people who would have left before the storm, who grew up here and went to school elsewhere, came back. And I think, or stayed, instead of leaving to find another job, people became sort of recharged with commitment to the place. And I think that it's just sort of all, I mean, it's been going on since the storm, and it's been going on since the oil spill and all of that, that people are sort of, you know, reinvesting themselves into New Orleans or becoming more active.
Settling in.
But I think that there's something interesting that's been going on in the last year and a half that I've noticed. It's like all of these people who decided to stay, there still aren't that many jobs in New Orleans. You know, you still work in the service industry a lot of the times, and all of these people who are doing sort of creative things in food and in cocktails and beer and coffee and all of these things are sort of getting itchy to do something different, kind of bringing back quality to something that they think isn't here, or just adding more quality to the city. Because, you know, New Orleans is famous for and awesome for its food and beverage industry, so it's kind of an interesting push that people have right now. If that makes sense.
So, I mean, a lot of people know that New Orleans is kind of the reason we have cocktails in America. You know, I mean,
that's what they say.
The first pharmacy in America was here.
Yeah.
There's an amazing spot, the Pharmacy Museum, that is, I believe, in the location. It is the first pharmacy, like, in America.
But sounds right to me. But I've been there, but I usually get really distracted by awesome things on display.
I mean, it's an amazing space. But, you know, what are some of the things within New Orleans cocktail history culture that you mm-hmm. really gravitate towards? Like, for me, it's the fact that Huey P. Long made sure that when they built the highway for him,
mm-hmm.
it led directly to the Roosevelt.
Yes.
To the entrance, where they would serve him up a Ramos Gin Fizz immediately
yes.
every day after work.
Yes. He had a personal bartender to make sure that happened.
So, I mean, for you, like, what is a fun part of New Orleans cocktail history that you really love? And what are some of those things that help influence your inspiration for when you're making cocktails?
Sure. I mean, I just think it's all really cool. I love that we had Peychaud's Bitters developed in the quarter, and that they were developed as medicine. I always think that that's awesome. But
that people found a way to have a party with medicine.
Right. Or that people, yeah, I mean, I guess people are still doing that. But, you know, New Orleans started the trend. But no, I think it's all really cool. I mean, New Orleans has such a rich history with the cocktail. We have the Museum of the American Cocktail downtown that, you know, has all of these vintage absinthe bottles. You know, absinthe was such a big deal here, and yeah, bitters, cocktails, all of the piracy. You know, it's just like all of this kind of great history. I mean, what isn't awesome about the history of New Orleans? It's just sort of, it's so, you know, it's like dirty and kind of gritty and like, I don't know.
So,
it's great.
In terms of, you know, your quintessential classic New Orleans cocktail, like, uh-huh. What's your go-to?
Oh, man, I love a good Ramos Gin Fizz.
That's mine, too.
Yeah, speaking of Huey P. Long. I mean, I will never turn down a good Sazerac, but, man, a good Ramos Gin Fizz is just, like, the best thing. It's the best thing for a hangover, too.
Besides yourself, who's making the best Ramos Gin Fizz?
Ooh.
Or what bar?
What bar?
Like, what's your go-to spot?
Yeah. My go-to spot for a Ramos Gin Fizz? Oh, God, you're going to make me incriminate myself. you know, I will always go to Cure for a pretty good Ramos Gin Fizz. I'll always go to the Roosevelt. Has a pretty good, I mean, they should, mm-hmm. since they're the progenitor of that drink pretty much, you know, but they have a great Ramos Gin Fizz. Usually I end up making them for myself because it's a Sunday morning drink and I don't want to go anywhere. So
yeah, I mean, it tastes like a creamsicle, kind of, but
yeah.
Like what's in a Ramos Gin Fizz and what's your basic recipe for that?
Oh, okay. Well, it's gin, a little bit of sugar, simple syrup, lemon, lime, citrus. There's an egg white that you have to shake for a long time so it banks up really high in the glass. Cream and orange flower water. And that is it. Just a little dash of orange flower water.
I have asked this question to Chris Hanna before, but uh-huh. What is your hangover cure?
What didn't I just say? What didn't I just
oh,
say?
Oh, well, besides a Ramos Gin Fizz.
Besides a Ramos Gin Fizz.
It can, you know, it doesn't have to be
what is
a
my
liquid.
Hangover
it
cure?
Can be, like, a food.
Yes.
Or, you know, some people, yakmin, et cetera.
Yakmin,
I don't know.
Yeah. I like pho. I think, yeah, Vietnamese pho is the best thing for me. Gets it done. It's like all the liquid. It's like, you know, all those electrolytes right back in there. But yeah, when I have a hangover, I like to get up, pretend that I'm gonna exercise, which I don't, but that is actually the best hangover cure.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's just difficult. No. Mm-hmm. It's just like hard to do. You know, sometimes if I can convince myself that I want to spend the muscle power energy that it takes to make a Ramos, I'll maybe do that for myself. Otherwise, I'll make somebody else do it. And then, you know, meander to the West Bank for some pho at some point.
Where do you go on the West Bank?
On the West Bank? Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of places over there. I think probably my favorite is, well, either Nine Roses or Tondin, probably.
Oh, you're gonna hate on Fota Bay.
I like Fota Bay. It's not bad. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, it's pretty legit. I'll go over to the New Orleans East too, somewhere on Chef Mentor, maybe.
That's a drive when you're hungover.
Yeah,
it's
a little drive.
A
yeah, somebody
drive.
Else. Somebody else is driving me at that point.
So, in terms of, you know, this event.
Mm-hmm.
The location always changes, right?
Yeah.
Are you guys going to be doing anything during Tales of the Cocktail?
Yeah. We, I mean, everybody in town is so busy that weekend, but I think we're planning to have one kind of early or after everybody's, like, you know,
tore up.
Yeah. So probably the Tuesday or the Wednesday before Tales, we might have one.
And, you know, in terms of the menu, like, what, or rather the bar list, how do you, talk a little bit about, like, how do you come up with the stuff that you're making and, you know?
Well, it's usually a collaborative effort on my part and on Corey Titchener, who's the other bartender and founder, I guess I should say, and our other bartending acquaintances. You know, Chris Hanna has helped us with a few ideas, and our friend Michael Glassberg, who is a great bartender at the Hotel Monteleone, another very classic New Orleans destination. I should make him make me a room sometime. That's what I should do. He helps us a bunch and, you know, is more than, yeah, it's everybody. It's really, I mean, I could go on and name everybody, but it's really a collaborative process. It takes, you know, all month, and then the night before, we have a pretty fun time taste testing everything.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's kind of a
mess.
It's taste testing, you know, you don't have to drink the whole thing. Helen, come on. Let's be serious. We're professionals. But yeah, no, it's a fun time. And, you know, we come up with different ideas and talk to other people in the community. And everybody has crazy ideas that they want to try out but can't, or, you know, don't exactly know how to make some weird ingredient. Or have some random batch of bitters brewing in their house, or have, you know, this crazy herb that they have out back that they don't know what to do with. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it's just a very organic kind of thing.
Seems like a bartender salon.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, sure.
That sounds awful for saying that, but it is very unique, and the vibe is fantastic. So is there any place people can locate you to find out when these events occur?
Yeah, we have a Twitter feed that we send out. You can find us on Facebook, friend us, or, you know, it's pretty word of mouthy, I think. There, you know, we don't usually have huge venues, so it kind of gets intimate, a little, very intimate. but yeah, we do have the Twitter, Dash and Pony, and Facebook, so that's probably the best way to find out where it is. And they, you know, they're once a month, so if you happen to be in New Orleans and ask around, you might be able to stumble upon us.
And see the bartenders' shake-offs. I think I'd like to see that the next time I attend.
The bartender shake-offs?
Yeah.
Did you not make it all the way to that part of the night?
Probably not.
I think you probably did.
Probably not. Well, Allie Mills, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And, you know, thanks to Jack Inslee, the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.